Well, hello, Haunters. This is a bonus episode of Green Tagged from Scott Swenson and I. Green Tagged is a show where we bring you the top stories in the theme park world in 30 minutes every week. So if you're not interested in that, you can skip the show, of course, and come back for our regular haunt briefing on Tuesday. But if you stick around, this show is all about the big national news stories that happened this week and what attractions can do about them. We also discuss the second state of emergency in Japan and what some attractions are doing to pivot in 2021. Here's the show.
Hello again, and welcome to Green Tag Theme Park in 30 with Scott Swenson. That's me. And Philip Hernandez. That's him, wherever he is. And we are here to give you everything that we think is important in the theme park world and the attractions world in the next 30 minutes. So just to keep us honest, I'm going to go ahead and start the timer, and we're going to dive right in. Now, just so you guys know, this is actually being recorded on January 8th, 2021. The only reason I say that is because there is a giant, I won't even call it elephant in the room. We're going to call it elephant in the news right now, that this week has been rather tumultuous, especially for you folks who are listening in the United States. We've had some unusual things happen, and we're not going to get political about it, but we would like to take just a moment to discuss how we feel it's going to impact the world of attractions and things that we feel that you probably need to kind of keep an eye on moving forward. In a nutshell, there was a violent protest at the Capitol building, and it happened during the counting of the electoral votes to officially make Joe Biden the president-elect of the United States. And I'm trying to be as non-political as possible because it's, that's not what this show's about, quite honestly, and there's no point in being divisive. So, but the idea is, and the thing that Philip and I have been talking about, is the fact that it was a violent act. It was a violent protest where they literally broke into the Capitol building. And, you know, if you're looking, again, those of us who are in the States know this, but if you're looking at us from outside and going, what is going on? We had some violent protests happen in the middle of last year as well. So we're not going to talk about, in this particular show, we're not going to talk about the minutiae of what is right and what is wrong, what we believe in and what we don't believe in. What we are going to look at, however, is why is this happening? Why is violence the go-to for people who feel disenfranchised? And how can we as attractions professionals be prepared for this moving forward? Because quite honestly, we will all have not only employees, but also guests who fall on both sides of the aisle, who may or may not feel disenfranchised and may or may not feel as though violence is the only thing that they can do. So, you know, other than, I know that the simplest answer would be, well, let's just increase security everywhere. But I think you can stop it before that happens. And I know Philip and I were chatting a little bit before the show. And I think, have I set that up appropriately, Philip? Does that give us an opportunity to have our discussion here?
Yeah, I think what we wanted to do was not harp on the incidents themselves, but just point out that the incidents, these items are just proof of how far we've gotten off of, just people are feeling disenfranchised and there's a lack of empathy. And those are things that we believe directly led to this. It doesn't matter what side you're on. And attractions, we exist to entertain people, and we want to have healthy environments. And on each side, it doesn't, if our guests feel disenfranchised or if our employees feel disenfranchised, and or if there's not sharing of empathy among both internal and external, then you lead to these feelings, which is what we're trying to avoid. And those are things that we believe that those of you listening can have a direct impact on. We believe that you can design environments to deliberately design empathy into your environments, and you can deliberately make it so that your employees and your guests don't feel disenfranchised. But it is intentional and it requires action, which is kind of what we wanted to get to as a takeaway.
Yeah, and some of the things that we talked about, some specific actions that can be taken, are, you know, things like make certain that you actually listen before you respond. I know that seems really basic, and it is, but quite often it's difficult, especially if, you know, you feel hypersensitive about a specific topic. It's going to be difficult to listen and hear the other person's side. And, you know, the answer after they, and I'm talking internally as a leader. You know, if you can create an environment where your people feel as though their words are as impactful as their picket signs or even their violent behavior, you can create an environment where you plan ahead so that you avoid some of this negative, over-the-top, I feel it's over-the-top response. And I think that, you know, creating that, creating that environment of listening first means that you can't go into a situation assuming you know, just because you know the person, what they're afraid of, what they're frustrated by, what they're angry about. You know, Philip, one of the things you do at Gantam is you do your one-on-ones with people on a pretty regular basis. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about what that entails?
So we do one-on-one sessions. I do them with every staff member every 2 weeks. It's on a regular schedule, and it's 30 minutes long each time. And I want to be very specific because I think people are hearing, oh, one-on-ones, I've heard this before. To me, the thing that makes a one-on-one is that you are never talking about the negative. It's not a time for you to come in and you to air your grievances. If you want to give them specific feedback of things that you would like them to change, you need to make that its own meeting where you are directly addressing that thing. The one-on-ones are to praise them, to say what is going well. And what I use my one-on-ones for is to talk about what they want to do with their lives, what they're trying to accomplish as people, which I know is definitely, not the norm, or I'm sure a lot of people are bug-eyed at me right now, especially the HR people. But I actually, when we did our feedback at the end of the year, surprisingly, that was one of the things that the employees said meant the most to them, is that there was actually somebody that was like, it doesn't matter what their goal is to me. You know, I asked them, tell me, what do you want to achieve? And I have one employee that they want to open their own business, and we have one that wants to just lose weight. And so with the losing weight one, I just ask her, what do you think you want to do? Well, I want to do cardio. Okay. So every 2 weeks she tells me if she kept up with her cardio or not, and that makes her feel better. And the one that wants to start their own business, you know, our founder Quan is a great entrepreneur. He's a pretty good mentor when it comes to making a business. So she has meetings with him where she just talks about her business plan, and now she has customers. You know, now she does the side work, and we're okay with that. And the thing is, I think the resistance that a lot of people feel is that they almost don't want to help the employee get better, because then they're going to leave. And the thing is, I know she's going to leave at some point. You know, I know a lot of my staff, I think the key is I want them to feel comfortable telling me that they don't want to stay at my company for the rest of their lives, because that's realistic. Nobody generally wants to, you know, depending on where you are, we have a lot of younger employees. They're not going to want to stay with me for the rest of their lives. That's normal. But if they pretend like it is and they don't tell me what they're really trying to do, I can't help them. And we want to get in front of these conversations. It's like, it's upstream thinking is understand where they want to go and help them get there so that they feel like they have agency in their everyday lives. And it doesn't mean that they're not still going to have to do things they may not want to do. You know, I have to remain the line. This is your job. Here's your job descriptions. These things have to get done. Your mentality doing them and the extra work I give you to help you get to where you want to go, those, we can get to together, as long as you do your job.
Well, and I think that that's a very good point. There are some parts of our jobs that just simply aren't fun. There are parts of every job, no matter how good it is, no matter how cool it is, that you just simply don't want to do. I mean, I love what I do, but there are parts, you know, when I've got a client that comes back for the sixth time and wants to rework the budget, that's not fun. So you can't say, well, you have to make the job always fun. Well, the job is in reality not always going to be fun, but you have to create the environment where the environment is fun. The job's not fun, but the environment is fun, or the environment is filled with empathy, or the environment is a place that people feel free to discuss what their issues are. And what that does is it's sort of like a relief valve so that things don't end up being mm-hmm. a violent, explosive outbreak. Now, I'm not going to say that people in your theme park, you know, your team members or your employees are going to all of a sudden riot in the middle of your common areas. But at the same time, there are varying levels of this kind of explosive and sometimes violent behavior. And I think we're in a situation right now. Again, I speak for the United States or even just my part of the United States. I think we're in a situation now where because people have been told, you know, they seem to believe that their words don't matter, or they seem to believe that it's us against them. That's another issue. You know, we've all, our HR friends who are listening have all heard the, is it the employees versus the managers? And every time an employee takes a class, they say, well, has my boss taken this class? Because they could really use it. You know, we hear that every single time. But when you break down the us against them, the I'm right, you're wrong mentality, it acts as an escape valve so the things don't escalate. And I'm hoping that if we can do that internally, then our team members feel empowered to do that with the guests as well. And, you know, you've heard Philip and I talk a lot about the importance of diversity. And with diversity comes this kind of difference of opinion. So we're not saying make everybody think the same. What we're saying is make it so that everyone can find a space and a way to share what their desires are as they move forward in their career, or what their frustrations are with your organization as a whole, or with their concerns about where the government is going, or their concerns about where, you know, we've always heard don't talk about politics or religion. I think you have to find the right place to talk about politics or religion.
And I agree to that. And I know that it's different in our company because we're a smaller company and because we have less employees. For those things, what I would say is make sure there's a place that employees can do it if they want to, but that you're not in the middle of it. Like, I do not agree with, discussing it as a meeting topic, you know, but at the same time, you know, we have dedicated, we don't use Slack, we use Click, but it's the same thing. And we have channels that our staff can share, like one's random. And we have a meme channel, we have a random channel, you know, we have a Gantam in the Wild channel if people find Gantams as they're like going to amusement parks or whatnot. And so we also have, our staff came to me and said, is it okay if we make one specifically to discuss the impact of COVID? And I'm like, that's fine. You do it, you organize it, you talk about it. And were there discussions in that chat about the incidents? Yes, there were. And I think that's fine. And I didn't have to be in the middle of it. You know, I don't have to be the one, like, you know, they talk about it, it's fine. And on the empathy thing, that's another thing that is built by design as well. I mentioned before that we do the icebreakers during meetings. And essentially, as a CEO, I understand that I am paying for staff members to just answer icebreaker questions. And it's actually a lot of money. I have, obviously, because I'm Philip, I have figured out how much per minute that costs us because I've broken it down. And so I know that...
And you probably have a spreadsheet.
I do.
That explains all
I
of
do
that.
Yeah. Actually. And so I literally can make a budget that is, this is how much icebreaker questions cost us in a year. But I think that it's invaluable because it allows people to, even though it seems silly on its surface, it allows people to see other dimensions of their coworkers. And I think that's what we're looking for when we talk about empathy. And you can't do that work quickly, and you can't do it all at once, and you can't do it reactionary. You know, it can't be a thing that you just like, you know, and it's okay to do small things, you know, small, make one step towards that every day. And I have seen that benefit out in that now some of our staff members have running jokes, and some of them have reached out to others because they didn't know the other person was interested in some topic, just some hobby. And they've made stronger connections because they would have not asked it, you know. And then, so those are the things I think that for the empathy and for the building of the environment like this.
And you've basically built internal brand loyalty. I mean, you've built your employees are loyal to the company because they feel as though they belong. You know, our HR, again, HR friends listening, this is going to sound like a broken record, but not all companies embrace it. And that is the fact that pay is very rarely the number one thing that causes people to either stay or leave in a particular job. Usually it's things like being heard, the power of actually making a difference, the freedom to be who they are and feel comfortable in the workplace. And by doing these kinds of things, by having this kind of empathy, not only are you reducing the us against them-ism, you're also making a healthier overall work environment. And if we could take that we could take that to a macrocosm, we may have fewer and fewer violent protests. I'm not sure whether that's even possible. I'd like to think it is, but what I would like to say is if we can do it on the microcosm in each organization and make people feel as though they are invested, they are heard, their voices, there is a proper way to handle things and their voices are heard, that we'll be less likely to see that kind of behavior on a much broader scale. We're training people, and I think that's important. So I think that's kind of our let's address the elephant in the room. Let's address the change of politics here in the United States without talking about politics at all. So I think we did that very well.
For those that are curious, I brought up my spreadsheet. We spend about $300 a week on those types of empathy questions.
But I think that's money well invested.
I just wanted to go on a number.
Yeah. Well, here for the next show, Philip, I'd like you to take that and compare it to the training cost of replacement people and figure out that it actually does save you money, because I can almost guarantee, even without looking at the spreadsheet, that it does. So I think it's a good investment. You're investing in your people. You're investing in your people. So let's see. Other than politics in the United States, what's the other thing that seems to be on everybody's mind? There's a pandemic going on, and it's you know, I'm not trying to make light of the pandemic, but it's one of those situations where, you know, the numbers are skyrocketing, and there's a lot of discussion about the vaccine. It's like that's going to be the holy savior, and it's a new year, so all of a sudden that's going to be great. The politics have changed, so perhaps that's going to change the way the pandemic is being dealt with here in the United States. But I think it's important to recognize that it ain't over, kids. You know, it's not just a magic light switch. You've heard us say for the longest time, when we get back to normal is a statement that we should not be saying, because there is a new normal. And I don't even think we've hit that yet. I think we've got some more time. We've got a lot more vaccinations to get out there. A lot more people are going to become sick. And a lot more people are going to die. And I'm not saying this to be to be a downer. I'm saying this to you as an industry professional, that you need to be prepared for this, because it could mean anything from your attraction is going to need to shut down again to you're going to lose certain avenues of production to you're going to have specific requirements for your guests. And I don't think anybody knows exactly what those are. I mean, with the introduction of the new COVID, the newest strain, it's different but similar. And these things are just going to continue. I mean, Japan, for example, has now declared its second state of emergency. And Philip, because it's Asia, and I know that you understand it so much better than I'll let you explain kind of what's going on there.
So Japan on Thursday did declare a second state of emergency. The Prime Minister, Yoshihide Suga, announced it on
That's
Thursday.
That's the main reason I let Philip do it, because he can actually pronounce the names correctly.
And yes. Basically, what he did is they did announce second one. It's not very severe, in that the emergency declaration will hand power over to local governments to urge residents to stay at home. But there really are not like penalties if they don't do it. But for the of course, what's that? That's going to mean that places like gyms and theme parks and restaurants are going to be asked to shorten hours or to close entirely. And then there's also talk of the Olympics, where Suga is maintaining that they would like to keep the games on schedule, but some of the people in the party and the majority of the public are not necessarily agreeing with that, or thinking that might still be derailed, depending, again, as Scott said, you know, things are just continuing to evolve and change. And so if this second state of emergency gets longer, you know, it's going to start inching closer to when the Olympics were scheduled to happen. But you know, here we just had all this excitement about Super Mario World opening over in Japan, and now theme parks have to close, or at least shorten hours, or whatever restrictions they're going to end up putting on. So it's definitely still an up and down.
And I think we as an industry need to continue to act as though we are dealing with a crisis, or at least be prepared to deal with a crisis. You know, yes, I think that the vaccines are a phenomenal step in the right direction. I think that the fact that they are in the early stages, basically proving to be very effective. I think there's also something to be said for herd immunity. I think that's going to start kicking in very shortly, especially if we can get the vaccines rolled out in the U.S. or in the U.S. as much as they've been rolled out in the rest of the world. But I think that we can't all of a sudden just say, okay, well, the vaccine's here. We don't have to worry anymore. The other thing that I'm concerned about is sort of a laissez-faire approach on the back end. I've seen several people who are coronavirus survivors who were careful and are angry now. So they're kind of saying, do whatever you want. You know, you're going to get it or you're not. There's nothing you can do about it. That concerns me, because that's the kind of attitude that leads to full-out shutdowns. There are varying degrees of how we can slow the spread of this disease. There are varying degrees of ways that we can avoid the financially catastrophic shutdowns that many of us have already been through or are coming out of. And so I think that to just say, well, it's just another flu, I don't think we're there yet. Now, we may get to that point. There may come a day where, you know, COVID 28 is just another flu, and we get our flu shots like we do, you know, some of us have done every year of our lives. But we're not there yet. And whether the next crisis, because there's going to be another one, I don't know what it's going to be, but eventually there's going to be another one, whether it is health-related or technology-related or, you know, environmentally-related, there are going to be changes in the way we do our business. And if you're smart, you're going to constantly be prepping and not just say, here's the one way we're going to do it. You got to have alternative plans. And if the pandemic has shown us nothing else, it has shown us this. And we've talked about a lot of different ways. You know, I'm the one who's always saying it, but I'm almost getting tired of hearing it, and that's the word pivot. You know, we found the importance of being able to pivot, to reutilize our assets, and to find new ways to continue to do what we do. But that's not going to stop when this pandemic is under control. So don't sit back and relax. Continue to think. Continue to plan. Is it exhausting? Are we starting to get burnout? Yeah, probably. But we're not there yet. So my recommendation is keep your eyes and ears open, keep your opportunities open, keep those avenues open so that you can continue to be successful as the next chapter rolls into place.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and I just want to emphasize that we said previously on our previous show, we talked about how the arc of demand are turning. You know, and I'm sticking to that. But I want to just clarify, as Scott said, it sort of a long term return to demand. I don't think it means that we're going to flip a switch and suddenly everything's going to be back to everyone wanting to go to Disneyland. You know, I don't think that there's going to be a switch. I think it's going to be an up and down curve that ultimately arcs in a positive direction over time. You know, I don't think it's going to be a flip back up. And I think in many ways, the second state of emergency in Japan, I think, illustrates this because kind of on the one hand, you have people saying, well, if there aren't any penalties or just this, is this going to do anything because it has no teeth? And the answer is that, you know, the people don't really need penalties to listen to a state because they don't want to go to those places because they don't want to get sick, and they want to, you know, they don't want to put themselves in that situation. So it's just evidence of how this it's not like everybody, you know, every single person is clamoring to go out and do things. You know, just all they need to just say is we're in a state of emergency. You don't need to penalize people, and they understand. So that will not, you know, translate directly to the US, but I think for all of our international listeners, you need to think about your kind of like your, how, you know, the impact in your country, and just understand that you still need to be looking for ways, alternative ways, you know, to engage your audiences, and alternative ways to bring in revenue, and ways to kind of diversify your revenue streams. And not just saying, oh, now it's going to just flip back on and we're going to have 100% occupancy and demand again, like we used to.
And also recognize, I mean, this is coming from, being in Florida, where the mandated restrictions on a state level are virtually non-existent in comparison to some of the other environments here in the States. And what I want to say is, no matter what the mandates that come from the government or from your, you know, from the federal, local, county, whatever, that's the bare minimum. You can go above that if you choose to. And I have seen some organizations that have chosen to go above that and have their patrons respond very positively because they want to go out, but they don't want to go out and be unsafe. So if they have proof of concept that there is constant cleaning going on and that all masks are required and all of these different things, then they will go out. I think the desire is there to get out and do things again. I know it is with me, and I think it is with almost everybody. But there's also that concern. So try to find ways to balance that, to mediate that fear in a way that's based in the best science that we have. And will that science change as we move forward? Yes. I mean, you know, at the beginning of this, nobody was talking about a second strain. Second strain? What do you mean a second strain? You know, so recognize that science is going to continue to evolve. Just like our response to this virus will continue to evolve. Just to kind of put a little bow on this, make certain that you are continuing to plan for whatever can happen. Don't think that we're back on a nice, easy path, and because we're not. But that also doesn't mean that you need to panic. It also doesn't mean that you need to shut your doors and wrap everybody up in bubble wrap, because that's not going to solve the problem either. Continue to be vigilant, continue to be aware. And the people who are being vigilant and the people who are finding new ways are the ones who are finding trends that we've talked about that are actually proving to be positive and to actually kind of work. And now the first one hasn't necessarily been proven to work yet, but I think it's kind of cool. So, and I'm going to give my full disclosure here. I used to work, as some of you know, I used to work for SeaWorld Parks and Entertainment. I was an entertainer at Busch Gardens Williamsburg and then a manager at Busch Gardens and a director at Busch Gardens in Tampa. One of my former parks, Busch Gardens Williamsburg, which has been a seasonal park since it opened in 1975, has for the first time decided that it will, with limited attendance and limited days, will now be open year-round with some specialty events and perhaps only on weekends. And I'm curious, I'm very curious to see how this is going to work out. My gut instinct is it's a great idea. Because what it's going to do is it's going to take their attendance and spread it out throughout the year. It's going to take the folks who are looking for something to do and give them an opportunity on weekends in January when they do their winter weekends, give them the opportunity to get out and enjoy the park with a lower guest count. So it's going to be safer. And I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that this very unique pivot is something that is going to be beneficial to them. I will say, having lived in Williamsburg, Virginia for 2 years, the current, or this was several years ago, but at that time, the attendance dropped significantly in the winter months. So I'm hoping that there's going to be enough people there to support this, but it's going to give the locals a perfect opportunity to come out and enjoy the park when they don't want to enjoy it over the summer when it's jam-packed full. So I think that's a unique pivot. It's a unique way of reaching out and doing things in a different way. There's one going on at the Singapore airport that I think is hysterical. They're glamping. They're glamping at and using this. They've, again, how many different ways can we use the word entertainment? They're trying to bring out the idea of traveltainment to help airports weather COVID. I mean, fewer people were flying. Over the holidays, that was not necessarily the case, but they're finding ways to keep airports going. Now, what is this glamping all about, Philip?
So the way I understand it, they're really just trying to turn the airport into a bundled experience. You know, it's not just a place for you to pass through, but it's a place that you can stay in overnight and go camping. It's also, they're bringing in more cultural exhibits and, as we've seen, kind of bundle different experiences together, which I think is a great idea. Anytime you're bundling these experiences together and you're repurposing, as we said, you have your assets, you have your space, you're repurposing it. It's beautiful. I've flown into Changi Airport and it's a beautiful area. And it's really just saying, this is a beautiful area. Why don't we let people camp here?
Now, are they? It appears as though, from what I read, it appears as though that these quote unquote glamp sites or campsites are appropriately distanced, mm-hmm. and kind of gives a different experience that they probably, you know, 5 years ago or even 3 years ago, if anyone had come to the management and said, "Hey, you know what? Let's set up some tents and let people camp out in the airport." I'm sorry, I'm of the era that you didn't want to camp out in the airport. That meant that you missed the last flight home, but. But now they're taking, you know, now is the time to try those crazy ideas. They're taking these odd ideas and making something fresh and new out of them. I also like the fact that they're using the airport more as a social hub and not mm-hmm. just a place to catch a plane. Mm-hmm. They're not alone in doing this, by the way. The Harris Museum in the UK is working on a new expansion where they are going to become more of a cultural hub instead of just a singular museum. Now, one of the things that we've talked about a lot on this show is how different organizations can come together and find a unity and certainly a strength that exceeds the sum of the parts. So basically what they're doing at the Harris Museum is they're making it an art museum, a science museum, a library. They're adding a coffee shop and a gift shop. They're making it more of a cultural hub. So it's becoming sort of this... town square, for lack of a better description, a cultural town square, maybe that's the best way to put it. And they're tying into how the town that it's in connects with the rest of the world. And I think it's a great physical representation of what, you know, we've all learned on the internet. It's just taking it to a whole new level. And they're starting some rather significant expansions very shortly on that one. And they're taking a beautiful Victorian style building and making it useful for today, which I think is great. Now, would they have done that before without the pandemic? Maybe not. They probably would have just left it. But now that they are, the pandemic is forcing us or encouraging us to revitalize and bring things up to speed. So that's where we are. All right. Well, it looks like my timer is about to go off. Philip, are we close?
We are.
Yep.
We're at 30 minutes. Yep.
30 minutes. I knew we were there. All right, folks. Well, thank you again so much for listening to Green Tagged Theme Park in 30. If you are a regular listener, please, please, please give us a rating. Rate us on Apple or however you're listening. Yep, there it is. Here's my timer. So go ahead, rate us. Let us know. You can contact us. Let us know what you'd like to hear more about. If you'd like to find out more or read any of the show notes, you can go to the website, which is greentaggedshow.com, and spread the word. If you enjoy what you hear here and think this is beneficial to somebody else in your circle, please share, and hopefully we will take over the world of theme park eventually. Or at least share our views and our ideas. Thank you all so much for listening. On behalf of Philip Hernandez, I'm Scott Swenson, and this is Green Tagged, Theme Park in 30. See you next week.
And that is it for today. From the Haunted Attraction Network, I'm Philip, and this was your Haunt News Briefing. Make sure you hit that subscribe button so you catch our shows every Tuesday and Thursday. And if you like this episode, please leave us a review in iTunes and share this episode with a friend. Today's episode was sponsored in part by Gantam Lighting and Controls. It was produced by me, Philip Hernandez, with post-production and editing by David Swope, and music provided by Chris Thomas. And if you want to be part of the conversation, join our Facebook group at Haunters Toolbox. If you have news or a story to report, drop me a line at philip@hauntedattractionnetwork.com. And until next time, everyone, stay scary.
This is a Haunted Attraction Network production.